Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Scott Pelley is live in studio with us. Scott, a former war correspondent, White House correspondent, CBS News anchor, the author of a new book, Truth Worth Telling. First of all, Scott, thank you for being here.
Bill, great to be with you and Wendy. Thanks.
Second of all, let's talk about the title for just a little bit. Does truth mean what it used to mean, or has truth changed a little bit?
Truth has not changed at all. It always means the same thing. Nothing has changed in terms of truth in 2,000 years. It doesn't matter if you're writing on a stone tablet or a stone tablet. The truth is the truth. Now,
here's where it gets good,
Bill. The point of your question, Bill, is that we now are living in a moment in which the truth can be made to seem false, and what is false can be made to seem true. And part of what I'm saying in this book is that's where journalism comes in. There's no democracy without journalism. The founders gave us the power, right? The power over the government. But the only way we can exercise that power is with independent, reliable information. But we have gone seamlessly now from the information age to the disinformation age. And that's why I think real, reliable information like you have on WGN Radio is more important today than it ever has been.
Yeah.
And it's so discouraging for journalists all over right now to even hear that term fake news.
I bet this has happened to you, Wendy. Somebody came up to me on the street the other day and said, oh, this must be a terrible time to be a reporter. And I said, no, this is a great time to be a reporter because everybody's looking at us right now. And this is an opportunity. I particularly tell this to young people that this is an opportunity for us to show people what we do, show them how we do it, and tell them a little bit about our values and our principles.
How do you get people to believe you, though?
Well, that's a great question, and my my answer to that is just keep telling the truth, just again and again and again. You know, James Madison wrote that freedom of speech and freedom of the press are the rights that guarantee all the others. He knew that if we could read what we want to read, write what we want to write, hear what we want to hear, say what we want to say, then all the rights he put in the Bill of Rights would be protected.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's happening in our country right now. We are having a huge debate about journalism and truth and falsehood, but that's what the founders had in mind. As long as we can talk about this and say whatever the heck we want to say on WGN, then all of our rights will be protected.
Do you think that the president has made journalism the enemy of the people?
Well, you know, when I was anchoring the evening news in the first year of the Trump administration, we were very frank about what he was saying, what was true, what wasn't, and how we knew that. And it wasn't long after that he described CBS News as the enemy of the American people. Well, a few weeks later, I went to the White House. Me and several other anchors had been invited to have lunch with the president. And over the lunch table with everybody there, I said, you know, Mr. President, I'm concerned. I mean, take your best shot at the press. Absolutely, I get that. But enemy of the American people, I'm afraid some deranged individual is going to walk into a local TV station or newspaper and shoot the receptionist because she's the enemy of the American people. And the president looked up at the ceiling, and then he looked back at me, and this is a direct quote. He said, I don't worry about that. So fast forward a few months later, more than a year later, I would say. You remember the guy who mailed all the letter bombs to the people he considered to be enemies of the president?
Yes.
Well, the FBI calls me one day and says that they've been through the guy's computer. He has a file on me and my family, and he has my home address.
Oh, my God.
So one of the things that I'm telling people, one of the things I write about in the book, is that the rhetoric has become too incendiary on the right and on the left.
Both sides.
As Americans, we need to come back together in the middle, have a great argument about who's right about what, but we have to keep it within the bounds of civility, and I'm very concerned that we're losing that right now.
How do you think we can do that? Because it is nice having differences of opinion, and years ago you could talk about your differences in a civil way. Now there is no talking. It's pointing, it's accusing, it's you're an idiot, you're wrong. How do you think we can help come together?
You know, Wendy, you've just hit right on the head the thing that worries me about our beloved country more than anything else. With the internet and all the sources of information out there, we are now able to, and we're seeing this happen, we're seeing some of our fellow Americans withdraw into what I call digital citadels of confirming information. You can listen to a television channel or read a website that tells you all day long that what you already believe is correct. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a warm feeling.
Yeah.
I can get really used to that. Mm-hmm. But that's not democracy. We invented democracies so that people of diverse backgrounds and different views and different goals could work together mm-hmm. and move the country not left, not right, but forward. And Wendy, this is the thing that worries me the most. If we allow ourselves to pull apart and listen only to confirming information and retire from the debate, then I fear a new Cold War. But this time it's a cold civil war.
We're talking to Scott Pelley, newsman Scott Pelley. His book is Truth Worth Telling. It's available right now. I know this is speculative, but let's flash forward 20 years, 50 years. How will history look at this era, do you think?
Wow, what a great question, Bill. Walt Whitman wrote about poets, "He who sees the farthest has the most faith." And so I take the long view. You know, as Reverend King often said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Mm-hmm. You know, human progress, in my view, is one of progress and progress and progress. Every once in a while, we have something horrible happen. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think things always tend to get better. We can see that in so many ways in this country. Right now, with the Me Too movement, with gay marriage being mm-hmm. approved, and those sorts of things, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. How will people see this time 50 years from now? I hope we see this moment as the great awakening, that never before in human history have we been in a place where so much information was available to so many people. But the awakening is, never before in human history has more bad information yeah. been available to more people. I think the American people are just beginning to realize that with the Russians in 2016. Mm-hmm. Our adversaries have this all figured out. The Russians, the Chinese, the North Koreans. What's the fastest way to destroy a democracy? Is it terrorism, war, another Great Depression? I don't think so. I think the fastest way to destroy a democracy is to poison the information. That's what the Russians are doing, the mm-hmm. Chinese and North Koreans, even some cynical actors here in the United States to make a buck or win a race. And I hope 50 years from now, people will look back on 2019 and say, there's the moment that we realized we were being conned.
Mm-hmm. You know what gives me the greatest amount of hope right now is I have a 16-year-old son and a 20-year-old son, and they are way into politics. I'm telling you, when I was 16, all I cared about was getting my license. I didn't care, really. I didn't get involved. These kids are involved and aware. That gives me hope.
It absolutely gives you hope, Wendy. I'm so glad to hear that. My kids are much the same way, and as long as we have our young people participating in the systems that the founders created, we're good. I mean, we've been good for more than 220 years. We can have another American century if we will talk to each other and have our young people participate.
Scott, through your reporting, you have been in some very desperate situations. Waco, Texas comes to mind immediately. The first World Trade Center bombing comes to mind immediately. The list goes on and on and on. Is there a commonality when you're covering these stories? Do you get this impending doom and gloom around the area when you're covering these stories? How do you get through that?
You know, Bill, it's funny you should mention that. When I was anchoring the evening news, I was in Paris. We were covering the ISIS attack on Paris. You remember 120 people were killed. And I saw these Parisians setting up a makeshift memorial on a cobblestone street, and children and women and men were bringing all these candles, and they had this look on their face of bewilderment.
Yeah.
And it occurred to me in that moment, I have seen these people before. I saw them at Ground Zero at the World Trade Center on 9/11. I saw them at the Oklahoma City bombing. This look on their face of bewilderment, of essentially asking, what's the meaning of life? And I thought, you know, maybe that's the wrong question. Don't ask the meaning of life. Life is asking, what's the meaning of you? And this book is really about the people that I have met in my life who discovered that answer for themselves in some of the historic moments of our time. For example, the first chapter is called Gallantry, and it's about the firefighters that I saw sacrifice their lives at the World Trade Center.
Heroes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Total heroes. We need to take a quick break. Scott Pelley is with us. You have a very busy day, and you are going to end up in Naperville tonight. Community Christian Church, that's 1635 Emerson Lane. This special event is presented by Anderson's Bookshop. We'll talk about that and continue next. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN.
Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Scott Pelley, 60-minute correspondent, longtime newsman. His book is called Truth Worth Telling. It's available wherever books are sold. You were all over the internet a week ago. You did an interview with CNN where you described the work environment at CBS as a hostile work environment. What was behind that,
Scott? Used to be. And we went through a dark period at CBS News and at CBS writ large as well. And I think everybody's read about that. It was in the papers everywhere about the difficulties we had in terms of sexual harassment in a hostile work environment. And I spoke out internally about that because I felt it was important that the people above me knew what was going on and had awareness. But, you know, all those events were 2 years ago. And now CBS has taken strong action. We've got a new chairman of the entire corporation, a guy named Joe Iannello, who I've known for years, a guy of great principle and vision. We have a new president of the news division, and I laugh because it's my old friend Susan Zirinsky, and I laugh because I can't believe she's the first woman to run the CBS news division. I mean, it's about time.
Just now?
Yes. She's the first woman to run the news division, a great thing. But what's even more important than that is she's been at CBS for 40 years. She has CBS News DNA. And the thing I'm really excited about as a 60 Minutes correspondent is we have a new executive producer of 60 Minutes. His name is Bill Owens. I've known Bill for more than 20 years, and he and I have literally been in combat together in Iraq. And I just don't know a more principled person in the news business than Bill. So really today, Bill and Wendy, I'm more excited about CBS than I ever have been.
Good.
I've been there for 30 years.
Good. You alluded last week to saying that maybe the fact that you were complaining about this hostile work environment could have potentially cost you your job as the anchor. You feel that way, huh?
Well, you know, that is what I said, and I know that there are people at CBS who disagree with me on that point. But what was important is that everyone did everything that they could to root out this hostile work environment, and I believe all of these executive changes have done that now.
Good. Very, very good.
Bill, you asked Scott a question off the air. I don't want to steal your question, so go for it.
I think you are one of the best at asking the right question to the right person at the right time. I marvel at your ability to do that. Who did you emulate? Who did you see as you were coming down the file and just say, boy, that guy or that woman, they do it right?
Well, you know, this may surprise you a little bit, but the person who studies the hardest before an interview, works the hardest before an interview, even rehearses an interview with one of his staff members to make sure he's got his game perfect, is Stephen Colbert.
Really?
I truly have never seen anything like it. Stephen's a great friend of mine. Obviously, he's not in the news business. He's in the satire business, the comedy business.
Which is where people get their news these days.
You know, my wife, Jane, says comedy is the new journalism.
Yeah.
And I've told Stephen that I think satire can get closer to the truth than straight reporting can.
Right.
Right? For all the obvious reasons. But Stephen's about the best interviewer, most prepared interviewer I've ever met. John Dickerson at CBS News, really sharp journalist, really sharp. And John knows what you and Wendy know, and that is it's not the questions you write down beforehand that are the magic in an interview. It's what you think of in the back and forth of the conversation. I always tell young people the most important thing in interviewing someone is listening to them.
Yes, because then you can do a follow-up question. And you said the important part of the conversation, that to me as a listener makes a good interview if there's conversation, not just questions, answers, and then on to the next one.
Yeah, too many people walk into a room with 12 questions written down, and while the person's answering question number one, they're thinking about reading question number two, and they're not listening. That there's no magic in that,
right.
And that's not obviously what we do at 60 Minutes. People say all the time, gee, you know, how is 60 Minutes going into its 52nd season? Well, Wendy, I think you just hit it right on the head. These are conversations that we have with people. We try to elicit as much interesting information from people as we can.
You've talked to multiple presidents, world leaders, newsmakers. Who has intimidated you? Have you ever interviewed somebody who's gotten you?
Intimidated me. You know, I'm going to have to say that if the word is intimidated, the answer is no one. Somehow, I feel when I'm in that pool of light that our cameramen set up around us, and we've got two chairs, and we're knee to knee, whoever that is, I feel like I'm in my element.
Yeah.
Someone tried to intimidate me once, and that was Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, the president of Iran. I was in his own rose garden in Tehran, and he wouldn't answer my question about whether they were developing nuclear weapons. So I went back at him again and again and again in 60 Minute style. He got completely exasperated, and he said to me finally, he said, "Are you a CIA agent?" This is Iran, and I am president of this country, you know, as in, how dare
right.
you? And that's when I knew I had a great interview.
Yeah, yeah, you did your job.
How do you know when to pull back and when to keep, not badgering, but keep continuing the question you want the answer to? How do you know? Is there a...
You know, it's a little bit like fly fishing. It is. It is. If you start pulling too hard and you start getting resistance, I try to let off the line a little bit, maybe go somewhere else and then circle back around after that person has had a chance to think about, oh gosh, why did he ask me that? Or what am I going to say about that? If you give them a minute, they may come up with an answer that they can give you. But it's a little bit like fly fishing, yeah.
It's interesting.
Who, since you mentioned Stephen Colbert, the wheels in my head are spinning. Who was the late night host that used to, from time to time, comment on how ripped you are? Was it David Letterman who would always talk about how you're the most ripped of all newsmen?
You know, I think it might have been Stephen.
Was it? Yeah.
And for your viewers, rather your listeners, that was a long time. So, although since I'm on radio, I'll say that I'm absolutely
bigger
ripped.
Than ever.
Yeah,
yeah. Bigger than ever.
Uh-huh.
Scott, now that this book is a huge hit, and it is, what's the next book? Have you figured that out already?
Oh, you know what? My hobby, and it's a very serious one, is photography.
Yeah.
And I've been talking to my publisher about publishing a book of photography. One of the great things about being at 60 Minutes is that I go to the most remote places in the world, meet the most amazing societies and cultures, see the greatest wild animals in the world. Mm-hmm. And so I've got quite a collection of photographs, and I might try that next.
That'd be a great book.
Yeah.
Please do that. What an honor to meet you. Been a fan forever, and then you come in and you're even better in real life. So what an honor it is to meet you. Scott Pelley's book is called Truth Worth Telling. It's available everywhere, and you can be seen tonight in Naperville.
In Naperville, that's right. Anderson Books up there is hosting an event, and I'm really looking forward to being
excellent
up there. Yeah, and I'm at the Union League Club at noon.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Busy,
but so glad to have a chance to speak with you.
Oh, thank you,
an
Scott.
An honor to meet you.
Thank you so much. A quick break, some news, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand, who is in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.